Welcome to another edition of El Paso Primetime. I'm Dennis Wu, sitting at the table with three wonderful folks that care about your lifestyle, care about taking care of you as a caretaker with someone in your family who, quite frankly, might be at the very edge of getting Alzheimer's, might be in the middle of having Alzheimer's, and you don't know where to go. Well, I can introduce you to three people right now that can help you along the way. Dr. Rado Schuback is a board-certified specialist in geriatric and internal medicine. He's in-house with us this afternoon, along with Chad Partington, who has this wonderful, wonderful idea, this concept that's come to fruition. It's called Good Life Senior Living and Memory Care. We'll talk about that during this the life of the show. And Sabrina Shaddix comes in with the idea and notion of bringing the two senior living care center and a board-certified specialist together in order to make it all work. Welcome to El Paso Primetime.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much. We're glad to be here.
Let's start with the seed that brought this whole thing together. Sabrina, let me go ahead and ask you, when this idea and notion started coming around the corner, how did you wind up designing or helping design this whole thing?
Well, I was on a flight back from Dallas and sat next to the founder of the Good Life Senior Living Center. And I was reading some medical material, and he said, ask if I was in the medical field. And I said, yes. He's like, well, we are looking for a physician that can oversee our residents of our new complex, our new residence center that we're building in El Paso, Texas. Do you know a physician that specializes in geriatrics? And I said, as a matter of fact, I do, Dr. Schuback. And we exchanged numbers, and I called Dr. Schuback promptly and his consultant, Joe, and we met for lunch, and they've been talking ever since and planning the whole process of providing this type of care for the residents here in El Paso.
Chad, as the man who helped put this all together as a facility, what led you to the idea and notion that El Paso finally needed something like this that was very specialized?
Well, you know, we do this in other communities. And so as we have worked our way through other communities, we're, you know, looking at other places that are going to need what we do. And, you know, we look at different aspects, and El Paso really fit the bill. Didn't seem to really have a lot of what people need when it comes to Alzheimer's and dementia care. There's just not that much available here. And especially our version of it, which is a smaller, more individualized version of Alzheimer's and memory care. So that's why we came this way, knowing that there wasn't much available, and even what was available is not anything like what we do. So that's kind of how it all started.
Dr. Schuback, you're a specialist in Alzheimer's and dementia and everything that goes bump and grind in the night with a patient who is in the throes of trying to figure out what's going on from the onset all the way to the end. How do you figure out which stage a patient is in and then treat that patient in order to give them the quality of life, and not only for them but also for the caregiver as well?
Well, this is to figuring out basically what stage of Alzheimer's or Alzheimer's-related type of dementias those patients are. It's not quite difficult. Specific when most of the patients who are coming in my office are coming in advanced or late stages. And I think this is very important here to talk about, because when you can actually have an impact is when the first signs of Alzheimer's are actually recognized by either patients or their loved ones or family, and then they prompt for an evaluation for what is called initially memory loss, or some a little bit of confusion, and so I think your question cannot be answered very simple, because as I said, the most difficult is to diagnose in the early stages. What means early stage of disease? Early stage of disease in which you have a very subtle type of memory loss involving very recent events. Sometimes people take this as sort of, it happened that I don't remember where I put my keys or I put my wallet. But this can be just, something of a regular lifestyle, or mm-hmm. people have that on a regular basis. But when these things start becoming a little bit more pronounced and when it starts interfering also with people's ability to go to the appointments, for example, or not to remember certain things which are part of their regular lifestyle, that's when I think it's important to be evaluated. And at that stage, it's a little bit more, more comprehensive type of evaluation. So first of all, we have to rule out other, which is called reversible causes of memory loss. And there are many reasons for that, such as, first of all, you have to rule out depression, for example. A lot of people with depression, they start having memory problems, disorientation, remembering to do certain things, not even taking care of themselves or the use before. So one of the things that I'm doing is in those particular early stages is to make sure that we're not dealing with other diseases or other pathologies that actually mimic memory loss. So this is the most difficult aspect of it. So early stages to rule out depression, to rule out thyroid problems, to rule out vitamin B12 deficiencies, for example, and other diseases. Once you do that, then the next step is, talk with the patient and say, well, based on what we have here, we need to go a little bit farther. So at that point, it gets more comprehensive assessment. So we are dealing here with not only with the memory, but also with the spatial presentations, also which is called anomia or apraxia. So very important in early stages, it's not the mini mental. A lot of people scored excellent on mini mental status, which I heard it's, everybody says, oh, mini mental, you have to have that below certain level, which is, 30 points. I have patients with Alzheimer's that is quite significant that they scored 28, 29 from 30. And this is in people who have, they don't go to school, for example, so it's almost normal, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but when you put them to draw a clock, then that clock, which is very sensitive for the frontal areas which are affected in this disease and which put those things in a three-dimensional space, mm-hmm. they have a very bad clock. So, or there are certain clues or cueing that they are not able to reproduce normally. So I'll give you an example. We're talking before we start this interview about music, right?
Right.
So, so we have certain figures that you tell the patient to tell you what is this. So, and I gave you this example, you have a guitar, right? And he looks at it and says it's a violin. Right there, just one single aspect of this can give the physician the clue that we're dealing here with early Alzheimer's. Although it looks the same, but the person cannot actually put those two things together. So you have the spatial this representation of the certain objects, or other clue. For example, you point toward the pen, right?
Right.
So you ask for different parts of the pen. So you ask him, "What is this?" So you show the clip, and the person is gonna say, "Well, is that thing that you hang on?" All right. So this is part of the so-called anomia, or the inability to say the particular name of that object or to describe it correctly. So those are more comprehensive exams. So once you do that, you can, from at that point, you have to tailor the intervention, okay? So I'm focusing more on early because later stages and advanced stages of Alzheimer's, unfortunately, there is nothing much to be done there, and we enter more into the total different management of this disease, in which the families needs to be very involved, in which the families needs to be educated, what they have to expect. The environment needs to be actually somewhat tailored to those patients. So that's when actually the real interdisciplinary community education in which Chad, with what he brought here to make in El Paso, I think that's when we are coming together. And I don't know if it's a question of I would say culture, but I've seen here people just bringing patients on a very late stages. And it's a lot of work to communicate how to deal in those late stages with the disease. So you ask me how you diagnose them. It's basically I focus more on the first aspect of it because I think the physicians who know how to deal with it, that's when you have an impact. And the impact is at this point we don't have a cure, but the impact is how to reduce the progression of this disease, on how to slow it down. And there are many, I don't know if you have time, I'm not going to talk about it, but there are many steps that can be taken at that stage.
One of the things that I've noted over the years in doing this particular show, this show used to be called Senior Junction, and we had for years tried to get people who were involved in Alzheimer's research to come on board and talk about this. This is the first time we've actually had a down-to-earth discussion on the early onset of Alzheimer's, and it's an important thing to talk about. There are other organizations in town who are wonderful at what they do in terms of support, especially the nonprofit organizations. They're fine for that. But the one thing that I've noted, the one thing that you've noted, Dr. Shubak, is that people wait to the last moment to bring their loved ones in because they still don't understand. You know, we've had the stars come out just recently, Pat Summitt, Glenn Campbell. These two have been at the pinnacle of, okay, I have early onset of Alzheimer's. It's time to say goodbye before I can't. So, Chad, when you have patients come in those middle to late stages, how do you prepare the family to understand that, well, you know, we've got to go this route?
Well, that's probably one of the most difficult things because most families either don't understand it, number one, and two, don't want to admit it. And so it's our job to try and help them understand the process, understand what it's going to mean for the care of that, whoever it is, their mom, their dad, their grandma, whatever it is. And so to help them learn some of the stuff that Dr. Shubak is talking about, saying, you know, here's the progression. This is not curable. Things can be done. We need to understand exactly what's going on to be able to help your mother, for example.
Mm-hmm.
We can't just say, okay, well, here she is. Good luck. Hope she doesn't run away. You know, we can't have those kinds of things. We don't allow that kind of thing. We want to know everything about each resident. We have to know specifics, how their life was, what they did, who they were, when did they get married, how many kids did they have, what were their kids' names, how many boys, how many girls. I mean, we want to know everything so that we can tailor the care that we're giving to that resident and to that family, mm-hmm. and help them help us along that path. So it's really important for us to be able to use someone like Dr. Shubak and say, help them understand with us, because it means more coming from – it doesn't mean much coming from me,
right,
or even from our caregiver or someone like that. I understand that, but I don't really want to deal with it. It means a lot more when we have an expert in the field who can say, here's what you're going to deal with. These are the things that are going to happen, and this is what we're going to do to help you as best we can, since it's not curable. And that's a huge piece of it, and what most people lack and what most facilities or families lack in their life.
Well, I'm recognizing that you've designed a mode of lifestyle for the patient in a multidimensional sort of a way that makes both the patient and the family feel wonderful about having the care, because it's so hard to do on your own. Dr. Shubak, I'd heard and had seen several different articles that said that there are 47, at least 47 different dimensions of dementia and Alzheimer's.
Well, I don't know about 47, but there are, I would say three big categories if we have to go to that route. And I'm glad you bring that here because one of the challenges which I have when I have those patients, actually not quite the patients but the families, is to make them understand what Alzheimer's is. Because I would say 90% of the time they're asking me, they're telling me, this is dementia, but it's not Alzheimer's. Okay, so they even don't understand that Alzheimer's is the most common form of dementia. So I have to explain them that there are other forms of dementia in which there's a different approach. So coming back to your question, Alzheimer's type dementia, which is well-defined due to a particular physiopathology that produce those changes in the brain, it's about 60 to 65% of all dementias, okay? The rest, about 25-30%, are vascular type dementias, which are occurring due to stroke, due to anoxic brain injuries, due to head traumas, due to diabetes, hypertension that produce small infarcts in the brain. And they can manifest themselves also with memory problems, lack of coordination, and so forth. However, the typical Alzheimer patient, first of all, they are healthy. In other words, they show to your office at the age of 80, healthy. What means healthy? In good physical shape, all the labs are normal, everything is perfect normal, but they have the memory problems and the aspects that we talked before. So this is a pure Alzheimer, okay? Now, the rest of dementias, which I said, which are the vascular type, the second big majority of that, okay, half of them or most of them also have underlying Alzheimer's. So if I have to talk about a patient who had a stroke or had, you know, some diabetes before, we don't know until you do a post-mortem, right, or do an autopsy, if they have also underlying Alzheimer's. Therefore, you can say that Alzheimer's is more than 60 or 65% of dementia. They can probably go up to 80% or 85% of all dementias, okay, considering that they are also part of underlying problem also in vascular. The rest 5 or 10% of dementia are basically frontal type, like everybody knows about mad cow disease, alcohol-related dementia, which have a different aspect, drug-induced dementias, and so forth. So I would say there are three big categories. Alzheimer's is the biggest one. Vascular type, the second one, which is combined, what I call the mixed type dementia. And then you have the other 5, 10%, which are like frontal lobe dementia. Actually, I've seen a movie recently with, who was the actor? I don't remember. Kevin Costner, I think.
Okay.
I'm not sure. Where he has frontal lobe dementia. And it's very well played. I don't think it was Kevin Costner. Anyhow, it was very well played for the actor showing what... Nicolas Cage. He played very well what this particular sign. So if somebody goes and watch that movie with Nicolas Cage, which is just came this month on the screen, you could see very well played frontal lobe dementia patient. Okay? So when you come to me, I will evaluate the patient or your family, and I will tell you, look, this is most likely it's not or it is. So what you do, doctor, for that? I mean, how you know, I don't think she has this. You don't think she has that. So what can you do, right? So the next question would be, so how you differentiate between them, okay? Well, in those stages, it's difficult to differentiate. However, if they are typical, as I said, if I have a person coming which is healthy, doesn't have other, no stroke, whatever, I tell the families, okay, we're doing the first workup, which we talked about before, and this one is negative. Then my next step is to have what is called positron emission tomography, which is it's like a sort of a brain scanning in which shows particular area of glucose metabolism in the brain. So in patients with Alzheimer's, there are particular areas which are positive of having a poor metabolism of the glucose. If with that imaging, correlating with the clinical pictures, I can tell the family, based on what we have, we are dealing, I would say, 90% plus with dementia, okay? If that PET scan is negative, most likely we are not dealing with Alzheimer's type dementia, but other forms of dementia. Why is that important? It's important because most of the medications that you are developing are for Alzheimer's, all
right? Right.
So a lot of doctors out there in the community, because lacking the experience or how to deal with those patients, just because he has dementia, they prescribe him, which is called the memory pill. And this is the wrong information given to family or the patient. I give you a memory pill. You take a memory pill, your memory is coming back. Well, doctor, the memory doesn't come back. Well, first of all, as I said, sorry.
That's okay.
So I said, those medications are developed for Alzheimer's. Therefore, about if you have pure Alzheimer's, 30 to 40% only of patients are responding to that. So from the beginning, you have to tell that patients or the family that we are dealing here with only 30 to 40% positive response. But if you don't have Alzheimer's, you have other form of dementia, the likelihood to respond is way less than that. But then you get everybody's getting frustrating. They still take the memory pill. They still don't see any improvement. And I'm telling you that this memory pill is given very wrong, okay? I'm not going to say particular how, but it's given wrong. And then they come when after 2, 3, 4 years, when nothing happened, they come, hey, doc, we heard about help us. So it's very very cumbersome to actually to have that education at that stage.
Right.
But at that point, when you differentiate between them, you can have a clear picture. The family has a clear picture. The education is there. I've seen that has a huge impact in the way the families are dealing with the situation. And then we're dealing here also with a lot of behavior with those patients have in the later stages. And I would say blessed that due to the circumstances, I did a lot of training in geropsychiatry before here. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of things that they go together with the psychiatric behavior and the psychological things. So so I noticed a huge difference in the family response when all those things are cleared up. So as I said, we are lacking here a lot of education in the population in this area. I think we are lacking, support in the geriatric field and dealing with Alzheimer's. And also, I see a lot of frustration from physicians to deal with those patients. And I understand that. If I would have to deal with a broken hip to do a surgery, I was probably not very comfortable to deal with that. So I will, just pushing aside. But if you don't have anybody to deal a broken hip, I have to deal the way you can, right? Mm-hmm. So there are many factors here that they are involved in. And the model, when we talk, I had the chance to meet Chad and after Sabrina told me, and actually telling you the truth, I'm trying to find a geriatrician to work with for 10 years since I'm here in El Paso. I couldn't find any.
Right.
I know some very good doctors at Texas Tech, but they don't want to get out of the teaching. So I said, okay, let's see what it's all about and, what the heck. So, I think that it's a total new and good and fresh air that can bring to this community. And talking about what he wants to do and what you ask him, it's very simple. When you reach that point in dementia, you need the environment in what you are living it. It's very important. And if you, most of the problem that we have everywhere is the fact that those patients that are going in an unknown environment where more or less they are threatened. They perceive it as a threatened environment. And that's why we have the problems in all the facilities which I'm in, which patients get very agitated, very aggressive, disoriented. So because they are suddenly in an environment which they perceive as threatened. It's difficult to explain. I mean, it takes longer to explain why that.
Sure.
But that's what happened. So when you have a home or as close as home environment with people that you sooner or later identify that being part of your family and that they help you. That threatened type of that threat actually disappears. Once the threat disappears, the orientation becomes different. The way they will interact in a home environment, it's way better than any patient with Alzheimer's interacts outside their home. And this is a proven matter. And it's we have here in this country a certain idea that, you know, old people should go in a nursing home or whatever when you cannot take care of them. Well, I was born in Romania, all right? So we never had such a thing. Everybody was born and was dying there, my grandfather, grandmother, and so forth. Yes, they do have Alzheimer's. I never seen an abnormal behavior. I never seen getting angry, agitated, want to leave, go, and things like that. Well, because that environment is theirs. So once the memory goes, you know, you're going backwards. You're going backwards to your childhood. So as far as your memory goes, it's very simple. At that point, let's say, as the memory erases backwards, you end up when you are, let's say, 16-year-old, okay? Mm-hmm. So you as an individual, you are 16-year-old. People around you don't understand that concept. So you are acting as a 16-year-old with the memories that you had at 16. Therefore, you're going to have families telling you, well, my mom says she wants to go to Tennessee to go someplace or to with my father. I said, and I told her, my father is dead. You cannot go there. Well, the thing is, you at that point, you don't understand that the reality of that person is the memory, and she lives or he lives when he's 16 now. You have to understand that. So people who do not understand that will create more problems, including the families. So first thing is, do not contradict. Yes, we're going to go to Tennessee to meet, you know, your husband, all right? Well, the husband is dead for 20 years. But at that point, you calm them. You calm them. Everything is fine. Everything is settled, all right? So those are things that with education only and knowing how this disease will develop in years and implementing that through the families, you can help. Now, what Chad is doing is bringing that type of home and environment and people to understand that in that particular facility.
Chad, how do they get a hold of information about Good Life Senior Living and Memory Care?
Visit our website, which is goodlifeseniorliving.com. And our phone number for here, the local number, is 915-309-5822.
I'm glad you're here now, and I'm sure there's a number of our listeners who are really glad that you're here, too. So all of this information will be up on our website. Dr. Radu Shabak, Chad Partington, Sabrina Shaddix, thank you so much for coming in. Mikasa Zukasa, I'd love to have all of you come back in again. We need to talk more and more about Alzheimer's. So we'll have you back another time, hopefully before April, and let's do it all over again.
That sounds great.
And thank you so much for listening to this episode of El Paso Primetime. You'll find the archive up on our website, ktep.org. Thanks to Deidre Westenhauser, who did the editing and also the recording initially. Thank you for listening to El Paso Primetime.